when I was younger, I had the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
I thought that was a great, you know, the movie's good too, but the soundtrack to me was sort of a really...
Oh, the Bee Gees, man.
An amazing... That's classic. You know, and I was not a disco guy. In the small town I grew up, Maryland did not have dance places like that. And
right.
The you music
do,
just
you
made,
do come off as a disco guy to us. I just want you to know.
Don't
that.
I?
Yeah, I
if
feel
you
like
can't
it.
See my bell bottoms right now, you should really watch it.
They're really spedankled. It's fantastic.
Exactly.
Is that a word? I don't know.
Yes. Welcome to One More Hollywood Podcast. I'm Chris Moore.
Hi, I'm Katie Marpy.
And I'm Dennis DeNobly. Thanks for joining us. So since the Grammy Awards were this past Sunday, it got us thinking about music in films. And I can't help but think back to when I was in college. Shout out Savannah College of Art and Design. I had a scriptwriting professor, and I use that term very loosely. He repeatedly told me that using music in film was cheating because if you are a good enough writer, you should be able to invoke motion through your writing, not through your music. So if I was to write a biopic about him, the theme song would be American Idiot by Green Day. In honor of him.
Oh.
Does he still work at SCAD?
Maybe not after this. I'm kidding. I have no idea. But I've obviously been obsessed with needle drops in movies and things like that. Needle drop being that it's when the filmmaker uses a pre-existing song to kind of, you know, add atmosphere to a certain sequence in their movie or otherwise a scene. It could be in the background or it could be part of the scene itself. But for me, huge, I think that music in movies is so important and it's one of my favorite things if done well. I want to put it out to you guys. What's your thoughts on popular music in film, but also of course scores?
Well, just to get back to your screenwriting professor really quick.
I figured you were going to let that one slide
yeah,
by.
I can't let that slide. Just think about how like awkward a movie is, like just completely silent, unless it's supposed to be like A Quiet Place, I assume didn't have a score because it was supposed to be silent. But
right,
like,
right.
That's just like,
yeah,
it's such an exception rather than a rule to right. not.
I mean, there's a reason why using no music or like a quiet in a scene actually adds tension for a
yeah.
reason.
Yeah.
So the
yes.
idea of just doing
purposely.
90 minutes of like wind blowing is like, oh boy.
You know?
Well, I used to tell folks that worked for me when they were trying to tell me that somebody was a good director, is I would say, watch the movie that you love with no sound.
Mm.
Oh,
and see if the direct, like no sound, no dialogue, no
yeah.
effects, no music, and see if you have the same reaction. Because, you know, part of what a director is supposed to do is use the camera to make it better than if you just read the script, right?
Yeah.
Right.
So,
yeah, for sure.
You know, I'm a big believer in music. I think music, camera, and, you know, acting are literally the three, you know, the three legs of the chair. And, you know, then you can add for certain types, you know, effects and that kind of stuff. But I just think it also can be used as character development. People have theme songs.
Right.
People have music they're listening to. I think your professor maybe was trying to make a point and you just missed the next class when he explained himself.
I hope so.
Or he was, you know, really not making a lot of sense.
Yeah.
But it is amazing if you watch a movie, like if you're listening to this and you're thinking about checking it out, pick your favorite movie or your favorite, you know, episode of TV or something and watch it totally on mute and see if you get it. See
yeah.
if you understand, because it is sound and music are so important
right.
for
yeah.
the way you feel and emotionally connect with a story.
I mean, even like the sound design, if we're going the score side of things, mm-hmm. You know, Katie, you and I just saw Handling the Undead
yes.
at Sundance, and their composer came up and answered some questions because sound was so important
yeah.
In that film. And actually, he won an award at Sundance for it. And, you know, I think
yeah.
after we watched it, we were both like, those like long shots, the eerie sound, the way that it sort of got you in the scene, just like you're, you know, emotionally ready for what you were going to see based on sort of the tones.
I feel like during, I can't remember this super clearly, but I feel like during the credits when we were waiting for the Q&A after Handling the Undead, you and I were talking about the score. And then you were like, the composer is coming up like to do the Q&A. And that was the only one that I was in where the composer came up to do the Q&A.
Absolutely, yeah.
So it was like, it was very noticeable how good the score was. And then on the way out, they were all kind of standing around and I was like, great score to the composer.
Exactly. I mean,
like, meanwhile, that guy is now on a quest to figure out who that woman was who said great score.
If only you had given him merch.
Yeah, I know.
Merch or a business card. Or,
oh, man.
We could send it to him separately.
Absolutely. We'll send this episode to him specifically. But, you know, I mean, I would say in this episode, there's one person very specific that has a very interesting insight into music in movies, and that would be Mr. Chris Moore, who, for many people, the original American Pie soundtrack was absolute banger that felt like their childhood when they go back and listen to it. So, Chris, obviously, music very important to you in your films. How did you get such great soundtracks with some of these newer artists in some of your movies early on?
I guess what I would say is, given that it's so important that, you know, you spend a lot of time figuring out who's going to do the music. You know, some directors, you know, in Good Will Hunting, we had Danny Elfman, and, you know, that's who Gus does a lot of work with.
Huge.
Tim Burton.
Who's that? I'm just kidding.
He does a lot of stuff.
Was he from Oingo Boingo? Oh, yeah. Right? That's right.
I think it's something like that, but he doesn't talk about it. And, you know, I think it sets a tone. In the case in American Pie, and I think I'll speak that there's good and great musical moments in a number of the films and stuff I've worked on, even documentaries like Project Greenlight. We have a score and, you know, there's other stuff. But the thing that was really amazing about American Pie, and this is sort of the thing why I'm so convinced that music has a real effect if any of your definitions of success are size of audience, is that the music in American Pie was not approved before we had a test screening. And the thing about music is it's expensive. If you're, and American Pie was primarily needle drops, as Dennis explained earlier. You know, we were looking for pop songs and songs of that day. We wanted everybody to think that these kids represented every high school in the world and that it was of a time and of a place. And, you know, one of the filmmakers was friends with Blink 182 when they were just starting out. And so they're actually in the movie.
Yeah, that's right. The little cameo moment, of the webcam
they
moment.
They have a little cameo with a monkey.
Yeah, that's right. That's random, but awesome.
The biggest thing for us is to set the tone of where you are, what the energy is for the project. That movie's supposed to be fun and fast, and it was meant to be that way. And so the thing that was really exciting, and this, in my opinion, also is a good piece of data for why professionals believe, and I'm not trying to be mean to your professor, that maybe he's not a professional, but why
I think I took care of that at the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, believe music's so important. So we had a test screening, which, you know, you guys have probably heard of before, where you put it in front of an audience and they don't really know what they're going to see. And in the first American Pie, nobody knew who any of those people were. You know, now if you did a test screening, they'd all know and laugh immediately when they saw Stifler or Jim or, you know, Allison or whatever. But the point was, so we put it up, and we had been arguing, we've been fighting very hard to keep it R-rated, and we were arguing that it was very sort of, it would have felt very real to a lot of teenagers, and there was a lot of worry. And we had this test screening, and the sort of bigwigs at Universal were sitting in the audience, and people were going crazy. They were laughing. They were doing whatever. We had this little movie that people, you know, we're worried, I don't know, it was going to be controversial or whatever. And we kept saying we thought it could be a really commercial success, being me, the actors, the writer, directors, other producers. And so we, you know, were hoping that this test screening was going to rock, because we needed, no offense to the executives, but, you know, they're older and they've seen a lot of movies, and there are certain scenes that might have made them feel uncomfortable.
I can see that, yeah.
And so we're in the screening and people are going crazy. And, you know, the total budget was around $10 million. And one of the very senior people at Universal turns to me and goes, "You just got $2 million more dollars for music." And the reason I like that story is because he knew as much as I knew that we didn't really need to change anything in the filming of it and the acting of it and the writing of it and the editing of it. But if you just added $2 million more dollars of, you know, Smash Mouth and, you know, Blink 182 and whatever, that you were going to make $30 million more dollars at the box office, right?
Yeah. It's a good investment.
And then the marketing executive, you know, and this is one of the other things, is a lot of times when you get the rights to the music for a movie, you're not actually allowed to use it in the trailer or the ads. So we picked a few songs that we paid extra for to use in the advertising and to do other stuff. And so that to me is just an example, at least on the commercial side of filmmaking, that music really matters because they're dropping big dollars to go buy, you know, get the rights to big popular songs. And so it's one of those things where, you know, again, we're doing this partly because the Grammys are out there, but really it's also, you know, original song and original score and everything are in all these award shows. And, you know, they really do matter. And for a lot of us, it's one of those things that happens that you don't even realize is happening until you maybe see it without it. Or you're sort of like, wait, that, yeah, if it wasn't for that song right there.
So did you guys work with a music supervisor or did you have songs in mind? So like, was there already a music supervisor when they told you you have $2 million more dollars? So you could just be like,
hey. And he deserves a lot of credit because he had been arguing that the movie's playing great and bands and people want to be part of it. Because, you know, the first American Pie is 99, you know, 2000. It's right when music and movies and television were becoming much more popular. And like today.
It's a great year, 1999.
What? Yeah, it's a great year. Dennis, at some point we'll do a 1999 episode because Dennis thinks it might be the greatest year for entertainment.
We have to now.
But it was American Pie. But the point was that when we started talking about it, they weren't sure that it was even going to be a big theatrical release. They were worried that theaters in American Pie wouldn't show it because the truth of the matter is the bulk of that audience is probably under 17 or really close to 17. Mm-hmm. And R-rated means theoretically they're not supposed to get to see it. Now, all the delinquents that worked on that movie, we were like, they'll get to see it. Don't worry. Right?
Yeah. And,
but, you know, officially they couldn't be like, we're making a movie for 15-year-olds that's rated R. Right? So,
that doesn't pan out well.
The spending, the music money really is valuable in a theater.
Yeah.
Right? Like, when you're at home and whatever, it still matters. It's still good, but I'm not sure in today's world where they were just, you know, they were saying, it's going to premiere on Peacock. I'm not sure any test score would have made them drop $2 million more dollars on the music to be on Peacock.
Well, just to counter this argument, a little bit, like around the same time period, but a little later, we had The OC and Grey's Anatomy. And those soundtracks were like everything to me in high school.
Yeah.
So I feel like I feel like it in TV, it matters just as much, which is why I asked about the music supervisor as well, because there's a actually shout out to Ryan, who writes our blogs that everyone should read on fusionstudios.com and LinkedIn. But she used to work at Chop Shop, which is the music supervision company that did the soundtracks for The OC and Grey's Anatomy. And so I feel like in TV, it's really important to have those popular songs or like up and coming musicians.
And I think MTV used to put a little banner at the bottom
of the songs, even like reality
shows like Jersey Shore, which obviously that tracks, but at the bottom it would say like the band name and the song and stuff. So you'd be like, oh, that's really awesome.
Well, record labels started doing a thing where they would give you a reduced price on a newer song or a newer band or whatever if you would say who they were, because it gets harder and harder to launch things. Whether it's a TV show, a movie, a documentary, but also a band, right? And so if you hear a song but you don't actually know who it is or what it is, you know, that's hard. Now today, you know, you got Shazam and other stuff, and maybe you could just find out. But it is an amazing part of it, and it creates an emotion that, if it's the right emotion, people want it again and again and again. They want to hear the song. They want to see the scene. They want to watch the whole movie. Like, it's, they want to go back and see the next episode of the show, you know? And
yeah,
OC is a great example of that.
Now, Chris, I would assume it's quite a different musical experience from American Pie to, say, Manchester by the Sea. So what, for you, on the most recent film, on Manchester by the Sea, obviously a very different subject matter, a very serious film. How different was that experience, sort of trying to figure out the, trying to bring music to it that added to the scene and but didn't pull away from the emotion, perhaps?
Well, so that movie, look, naturally, even if you were talking to a film professor who, you know, thought music had some value, it would be a movie you'd say is mostly going to be score, right? You're not having a pop song in a funeral. You're not having a pop song at, you know, sort of bar fights and things. But Kenny Lonergan, to his credit, and a lot of directors hear the music just as much as they see the picture in their heads. You know, he felt like there were certain moments that you were so inside the character's head, and for whatever other reasons, that you could play something different. One of the biggest ones in that movie was the Ray Charles song when Casey Affleck's character is at the bar. And for a while, there was a number of us, I'll put myself in there, who were like, well, it's a lot of money for a Ray Charles song. And we hadn't sold it, and we weren't 100% sure what would happen. And Kenny showed us the movie with the song, and it really, really worked, right? And then the score was, you know, even benefited, and it felt like a different thing when you actually had a real song in the bar, because you've been spending most of the movie with score, right? And so I think that, you know, but Kenny's a guy who is a great writer, but he's also a good director. Like, if you watch Kenny's movies without sound, you can follow the story and you do get brought in emotionally. He trusts actors in a real way. You know, I joke with my wife that nowadays, you know, when I have stuff in the background, when I'm doing more rudimentary tasks, you know, television today, you don't have to watch it. They'll say everything. Like, it could just soon be a podcast. Like, it's not, yeah. Like, it's fun to watch and you see them say it, but ultimately something that happened without anybody talking that's important, like to a mystery or to a, you know, whatever, someone will talk about later. They'll have to report to their boss. They'll have to tell their partner. And so it's, you know, those kind of things you can just, you can watch without picture, even though they're made to be, you know, watched. But
correct.
It's a really valuable thing. And again, these movies, American Pie or Manchester, the thing they have is very clear, you know, sort of moods, right? So the music helps set the mood. It helps set up how you're feeling. It's a, you know, the harder ones are the ones that bang in between, say, like, there's a term, the dramedy, which has got drama and comedy.
Right.
You know, you can undercut your movie if it's like the audience is taking it as a serious scene and you, for whatever reason, put in a funny light song, right? People might be like, dude,
that could destroy a, you know, really emotional scene for sure.
And sometimes, for me anyway, if the music's off, I start to doubt that I'm understanding what the filmmaker's trying to do. Like, if there's funny music and I'm super moved, I'm like, why would you do that? Like, what? Like, either you get to decide everything. Like, there's no such thing in a scripted film of a mistake that made it into the final cut, right?
Right,
there are weird mistakes, like the Jaws is famous that the shark didn't really work in the salt water and whatever, but they had time to figure out what they were going to do about that, right? Very rarely do you have a moment where, like, well, we just put that in the movie even though it's wrong, right?
So yeah.
You can get mad at a filmmaker if they're not making you feel the way you think you should or if it's not working. One of the movies I talk about with music that I had nothing to do with but I think was awesome is Footloose,
the old one,
Kevin Bacon one, because not only is the dancing and the music part of what they're fighting against, but it's such the right songs for the way they dance and the way they're doing stuff to make you just root for them,
Matt,
so much.
I mean, Kenny Loggins had a stretch where he, Caddyshack, even, and I'll bring this up because Katie's, of course, going to love it, Top Gun Danger Zone. I mean, when that when that needle drop hits, when that thing takes off, and again, it was so, that moment was so good, and that song was so perfect for that, that when they did Maverick, they did the same song, needle drop at the same, with just newer tech, and it was, and it immediately brought you back to the feeling of the first. It's a class, absolutely. I mean, Top Gun in general, they also had You've Lost That Love and Feeling when, I mean, it's originally the Righteous Brothers, but obviously Maverick sings it. But like, you know, those needle drops are so, so valuable to those specific moments, you know, outside of being almost like a theme song for it. Do you guys have any other needle drop moments that you remember from films that like you just can't escape, that you just love?
I mean, the one that I love that is also part of the plot is, you know, and as a producer, this is always worrisome, is if you do the scene when you're filming it using the actual music and then you can't get the music. It's a disaster trying to fix that. But this is not on one of my movies. I've just heard this story. But the I love the Peter Gabriel song and Say Anything. And he uses it, and the boombox scene is very, you know, sort of iconic and all that kind of stuff. And you know, Cameron Crowe has a history of, you know, knowing music and being a music reporter and doing that stuff. But like an example in my career was, I for a long time tried to make a movie about Lynyrd Skynyrd, probably a band that's too old now for any of you to remember. But they have a couple very famous songs. One is Freebird and the other is Sweet Home Alabama.
Absolutely.
And we tried for 2 years to get those two songs because we were like, there's just no way you can do the story of Lynyrd Skynyrd without having those songs. And we couldn't for rights issues and personal reasons. And so the whole project stopped. So I can't imagine what would happen to Cameron Crowe if all of a sudden Peter Gabriel was like, no, you can't use that song. Because it's...
I mean, him holding that boombox up is like legendary, like pop culture moment, you know? That whole timing, you know, even like Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Donkashene. Like the, you know, Wayne Newton song. Katie, how about you?
The thing that like weirdly really sticks in my mind is the end by The Doors at the opening of Apocalypse Now. I think because I've seen Apocalypse Now a lot of times because I was in film studies school for 100 years.
I mean, certainly lays the groundwork for what you're about to feel.
Yeah, but then, so I can't like hear that song without also hearing like the helicopter sounds and like thinking of Apocalypse Now. I just feel like it's iconic. Yeah. Weirdly, I think more about scores, like when music and movies comes to my mind, the like one of the first things that comes to my mind is The Dark Knight and how like unique that score sounded.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And then there was like so much discussion about it and like the violin sounds and like just kind of experimenting with that and how it was so creepy. I also just listened to a lot of movie scores like while I'm writing, when I was writing my dissertation, when I was writing my papers in college. So I think about those more often than the needle drops, weirdly.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, this obviously so the score, even down to like we were mentioned, the sound design. You know, I think we've all grown accustomed to like certain sounds that convey a feeling. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think we can all agree that there are certain sounds that people put in films when the character's having a panic attack or there's a realization or there's a scary thing coming, like the violin or...
Yeah,
it sort of immediately gets you in there, that feeling. And it doesn't necessarily need to be a part of the longer, like a longer score, but those sounds that sort of, and I don't mean jump scares, like, although it's used in horror, it's overused in horror, but like the idea of having like that high screeching sort of like loudening sound when a person is like having a panic attack or coming to realization of something is so interesting. It really does sort of help mold that moment for sure.
But where your professor is right is when the script doesn't work or the edit, the cut you're looking at doesn't work. You can make it better with music and you can make it better with sound design.
Yeah.
And you can improve it. And, you know, some people it's a trigger to the audience when the scene is sort of blah, the music can make it more intense in whichever way you want it to be intense.
Right. I mean, you know, yeah, like Dark Knight. I imagine the shot where you're just like, it's like the opening scene and you're like overhead going into the bank.
Yeah.
And you don't even know what's happening. It's just like right. an overhead yeah. like of New York or whatever, Gotham. And yeah. you know something like very terrible is happening somewhere because of these weird violin sounds. So I can see that. I could see your professor's point in terms of like needing to rely on music rather than the
right,
script.
Relying on music. I to some degree, still.
It
clown,
doesn't sound like that's what he said, though.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. It, personally, he hurt my feelings, considering my wedding song is Come and Get Your Love from Redbone that my wife both Aww. Heard in Guardians of the Galaxy. So go F yourself, buddy.
Great yeah. movie with music.
Oh, my God. And see, that's a practical needle drop because the character was listening
about
to it.
Guardians yeah. of the Galaxy that was so great was the songs they chose. This is the future, right?
Yeah.
And they
yes.
found a way through the tape deck that the mother gives them and dies that they could play these things that evoke these emotions.
Yeah.
When theoretically in the future, and there's like spaceships and aliens and monsters
yeah,
and you know
amazing.
Infinity
you're,
stones.
Yeah.
And you know you're listening to Ooga Shaka.
Yeah. yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whatever, you're like, wait, what? Yeah.
Like, you're like, am I listening to Fleetwood Mac right now?
Like,
yeah.
Exactly.
Such a good example of like how to also change up the vibe with music too, because it's so, Guardians yeah. of the Galaxy is so different than the rest of the Marvel movies because of that. They're just like,
yeah, yeah.
cool because of the music.
You could definitely see after that first movie did really well, other Marvel movies in the future started to use more. Like even
yeah.
Ragnarok has the Immigrant Song in it, which is like a really
yeah.
big
oh, yeah.
action moment.
Yes.
But like, that's the thing. It's like Katie, like you say, like there's certain times I hear a song and I can't not see
yeah.
the scene. Like I can't hear Where Is My Mind by the Pixies without seeing Fight Club with the buildings coming down.
Yes.
Yeah.
I just can't. Like it's impossible to hear that song and not think of that movie. And I think that's a powerful thing too.
The Immigrant Song is a good example also because I do remember it in Ragnarok, but wasn't it also the opening credits of the Fincher Girl with a Dragon Tattoo? Do you remember that?
I think it was.
I feel
actually,
like it was.
About.
And it was just like such a recognizable song and really set the... That is a song that I can't hear without thinking of a movie.
Right. I mean, that's the thing... Some of these movies have such incredible soundtracks that like really do. I mean, like, you know, Chris had mentioned there's some period piece ones that really hammer home like the time period through music, like mm-hmm. Almost Famous, Dazed and Confused and stuff like that, that are really great. Even Do the Right Thing. Like that was the first time I was young. I probably shouldn't have seen that movie when I did, but like Fight the Power from Public Enemy.
Yeah.
I was like,
yeah.
this mm-hmm. is magical. Like I love this song. It's so different than anything I'd heard. I loved it. And that whole movie is such an incredible movie. But, you know, even like, obviously, big surprise, I watched Goodfellas 175 times. And the music in that movie, specifically even the tracking shot, you know, where he's like walking through trying to get to his table. Like that whole mm-hmm. scene when then he kissed me is playing, like sets up the vibe. Like it's such a good soundtrack. So I don't know if any soundtracks like that stick out for you guys as well.
There's also, you know, the thing of the one theme song, like the James Bond movies usually have, have their score that you notice and recognize has probably been in the last 20 of them or 10 of them. But then there's also some famous ones, you know, Billie Eilish and Adele do their songs and, you know, they're literally writing and singing a song
yeah.
about the movie.
Yeah,
right?
It's the
like,
title
it's
of
even,
the movie.
You know,
you know?
Skyfall was not yeah. a song that Adele wrote
yeah.
for herself.
Yeah.
She
yeah.
wrote that for the movie. And
yeah.
I think
yeah.
that's the other thing is you can really, you know, be part of a cultural phenomenon in that way where you're, you know, you have that sort of feeling. And it sort of adds to the mystique of sort of this is a cool thing, I want to be part of it, you know, because there's an original song. I mean, I personally love the song that comes on in the Fast and the Furious one after Paul Walker dies.
Yeah, it's a Wiz Khalifa song.
But it's a really sad song. And it's a really, for me, you know, family is all we got and whatever. It totally grabbed the whole thing. And I wouldn't have found myself talking about Fast and the Furious in one of these podcasts. But that one in particular was a moment where, like, I hear it now on the radio or whatever. And it's immediately I picture that car driving away and this sort of the end of their friendship and whatever. And it's like that. They obviously put that together, and because it was a tragedy and because he died in real life, and so they had to deal with it. But it was it just had this moment of this weird real life, the movie life, the song written for the situation. They rewrote the end of the script to be able to do that. Like all of it was kind of a cool way to handle a tragedy.
Right. I love the coming in, artists coming in and custom creating. I mean, Black Panther, the first Black Panther, Kendrick Lamar's album is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely incredible. Head to toe, like all the music just gives you the feeling of the movie. It sets the tone. It's fantastic. Yeah. I know, Katie, you love scores, but what about soundtracks? Anything other than Moulin Rouge, which I also assume you were fan of?
I was just thinking, like, when do we get into musicals with this? Because I was actually just thinking about A Star Is Born.
That
song's super popular too.
Yeah. I like when you were discussing the Paul Walker thing and like not being able to like, you know, think about that when you hear the song, I just was thinking about the way they did the music in A Star Is Born. And I had never seen any A Star Is Born movies before seeing the Bradley Cooper, Lady Gaga one. And like, okay, spoiler alert. Hopefully everyone's seen a Star Is Born movie, but he dies at the end. And I was like, I was extremely confused. I did not expect him to die. Like, I don't know how I went through my life not knowing that was going to happen. And then they end it with that song that I can't remember the name of, that she writes for him, but then they end it, the very, very end is like them singing it together at the piano, and then they just put the credits on. And I've already discussed, I don't usually cry in movies, but that was like, I was coming to terms with the fact that he even died. But then it was the song that really got me.
Right.
And then they just put the credits, and I was like, how dare you? Like, how dare you not give me a minute, you know, like a buffer before we have to leave?
Like, easy.
Yeah, I'll never love again. Thank you, Sonia.
Yeah, if Bradley Cooper was on here, he'd say, yeah, that was the suits. Get the hell out of it. Be done. Yeah. Nobody wants to sit here for a minute listening to that song. Yeah. You know, he's like, no, dude, I think they might. Like,
yeah, is it really called I'll Never Love Again? Oh, my God. Like, that's asking for cries.
Holy
hell. That's kind of wild. I mean, I remember I saw Donnie Darko at Sundance, and they have that Mad World by Gary Jules. Right when he decides, also spoiler alert, God, he also dies. he decides to go back in time and blink himself so that everybody else can have happier life. And Katie, I did find out it was a deleted scene. I did watch that at Sundance where he literally dies violently and it's on camera. It's a real thing. I thought I lost my mind because every time I watched it, I was like, how come I don't remember seeing it? But you could find it online. Like, there's like a post in his chest.
Didn't they release a director's cut?
It's not on the director's cut either.
That's
why I was like, I'm insane. But no, it's apparently a real thing. I got to see it. It's on the internet.
Interesting.
But that, like,
I'll find it.
The slow
pit. That doesn't change the I'm insane analysis.
No. I'm clearly still
in
that.
In this specific case.
For this case, I'm a little less insane. But like the idea that they play that song, that like piano chord of it, and then you get to see all of the characters sort of going through it. What was fascinating for me is I saw that at Sundance, that song. And I was like, this is such a touching song. Years and years later, I was working on a docuseries for MTV called Gears of War, The Race to E3. It was the making of Gears of War, like the first Xbox game. So I was in Raleigh, North Carolina, and I remember being in the room when they played that song for their first ad. The first time you get to see what the game is about, what it looks like, you know, that there's aliens and there's like these like soldiers, intergalactic soldiers. And I remember sitting in the room, I'm filming, And they were like, this is the song we want to do. And after the storyboards, and they played that song. And I immediately thought of Donnie Darko. frankly, yeah. I was like, oh, that's Donnie Darko song. But like everyone in the room, like just started to get emotional. And again, I don't know if like they were just like, oh, this is like that feeling. But immediately, and then it went on to be this massive success, that promo, because that song is so like heart-wrenching, the piano and everything. So even transcending film into video trailers, video game trailers, was really great.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, again, that's another example of how anyone who pretends music isn't important for entertainment experience, whether it's a video game. I mean, look, you know, the Book of Mormon is one of my favorite plays. And, you know, in theater, you can say almost anything in a song, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They say stuff in those songs where you're just like, holy shit.
I haven't seen it. We've discussed this. I haven't seen the Book of Mormon, but I have listened to the soundtrack, and it is just so good.
It is amazing.
So good.
But that's the thing. Those guys are surprisingly good with music. I mean, even their, like, you know, South Park, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut, I think it was called.
Yeah.
Jesus, I feel awful saying that. But that was the name. But they, even then, like, I think they're like, you know, pardon, I'll just say it, F Canada was nominated for an Oscar, and they performed it, which is amazing. But like, it's such an interesting idea of like sort of how these songs in the musical sense make the most sense and help out, really, really drive it. What about movies that the movie wasn't good, but the music was? Like, the soundtrack was fun, but like, realistically, the movie is very forgettable.
Wait, let
There's
me consult my score.
That is
playlist.
A. I think it is a Cameron Crowe movie. It has a bunch of those grunge bands from Seattle, Pearl Jam's in it, and Soundgarden, and you know it was like Couples or something, or you know, it's sort of a life in Seattle kind of thing. And the movie didn't really hit me in any way. And the music was awesome. I just loved the music. So I
love that you're like, I love the music. I can't even remember what the movie was called, which is a perfect example of remembering the music more than the movie.
I can't.
It's singles.
Singles. There you
go. There
it
is.
See, they're not even couples. They're just singles. But I remember watching that movie being like, wow, all this great music, and I'm not quite in love with any of these characters.
Yeah, see, I feel the same way. There's this terrible movie, Judgment Night, by the way. It's 54% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's a terrible movie. Yeah. Great cast, though. Emilio Estevez, Cuba Gooding Jr., Jeremy Piven, Dennis Leary plays the villain. A lot of good cast, but the movie was terrible. The soundtrack is really interesting because they paired a rock band with a rap group for each of the songs.
Right.
So it's like Cypress Hill and Pearl Jam and then Biohazard and Onyx. And it's an incredible soundtrack, but damn, that movie is just, tragic.
But see, I always say, and again, maybe I'm not supposed to say shit like this as somebody who works in the business, but
say it.
I think it's a little bit of a rule of thumb I have. If the soundtrack is already cooler, like on paper, than the movie,
yeah,
it's probably true. Somebody's trying to cover up for the fact that the movie wasn't that good.
Right. Yeah.
And you know, I think that's part of what you find in entertainment as a whole is all these pieces. Like, you can get movies that are done by ILM, this sort of the high end of special effects and CGI. And then you watch the movie, you're like, they're touting ILM because the rest of the movie's awful. You know, the effects are good, but you know, so it's like, we got ILM and we got rock groups and rappers, and we got this great song that's playing on the trailer, and we got these actors, and you're like, well, what's the movie about? I'm like, well, I'm not going to tell you anything like that.
Never
mind
that.
I want you to make the decision based on the movie. Just
all
these other things should add up to a great experience for you.
Right. So, Chris, are you implying that High School High with John Lovitz used music with Erykah Badu, Wu-Tang Clan, Little Kim, and the Quad City DJs to make this make the movie better? Is that what you're trying to imply?
They tried to, yes.
I mean, it got a 37 on a Rotten Tomatoes, so I'm guessing yes.
Yes.
Terrible movie, great soundtrack.
But, you know, a lot of it is a business thing where back in the day when that one was probably got made, those artists got paid for their song to be in the movie, so they weren't spending a whole lot of time figuring out whether the movie is any good or not. They were just like, hey, I'll take the money. You want to put it in your movie? And then people got smarter about it over time because they're like, ooh, I don't need my song to be in that movie.
Right, yeah. Identified with a scene that's uncomfortable or some creepy shit, you know?
Yeah, but I also like it when songs are sometimes part of the movie. Like, there's still something about music. You know, I think in Back to the Future, one of Dennis's favorites, when he plays the Chuck Berry song, and you sort of have the joke to the audience of, oh, this is, you know, he's traveling in time. He plays the song. Chuck Berry hears it from Michael J. Fox, and then it becomes Chuck Berry's song. You're sort of like, okay, now I understand time travel.
Right.
You know, I also, I don't know, and this, obviously people know I have an experience with Matt Damon. I also know the guys who wrote and directed this movie, but there's a comedy out there called Eurotrip, and Matt plays
amazing
this punk,
cameo.
Punk rock singer who's having an affair with one of the guys, Scotty's girlfriends.
And
they all go to this concert, and he does a great, you wouldn't think of Matt as a punk rock singer, but he does a great job of this Scotty Doesn't Know song.
If y'all haven't seen this, you need to see this. It's fantastic.
It's awesome. And I actually think the movie's underrated. The movie's pretty funny, too.
Absolutely. I agree as well.
But that cameo sort of using songs and you know, that kind of stuff is really, can create a lot of energy also because it just is a break in the storytelling of just music, you know?
Absolutely.
And it can be really, you know, sort of lively. In that case, they were smart enough to coordinate it with the, you know, the story of Scotty not knowing.
yeah, it's a plot point somehow. You were like, oh, okay, I was unaware that she was cheating and he was unaware, which is great. I mean, and Sonya just mentioned this now, Across the Universe. Like, as a rock opera, if you want to call it that, the idea that you would take a wide variety of Beatles songs and then use the lyrics to sort of be points in the story. I mean, the part of that movie when they start to talk about, like, the riots and people being shot in the streets for civil rights, and then having them play My Guitar Slowly or Weeps, like that.
Yeah.
Is such a sad, like, it's, but it adds so much to it because of the fact that it was, you know, a practical song being sung over these images. So it's fantastic to write something to it, to add music to it, but then also, like, being smart about it. Like you mentioned, Chris, like, you know, Sonya also threw in there that, you know, in Castaway, Alan Silvestri won a Grammy Award for the score for that movie. However, it's mostly just sounds because, again, if he's on the island and there's, like, popular music, it distracts from the fact of him being, like, alone. The absence of music makes you feel like you're truly alone.
Composer say to me once, Dennis, on this exact point, he said, silence is music too.
He's right.
Ooh.
Like you just said, the absence of music. Like, it's particularly in visual storytelling, silence can have as much effect as piece of music. And then it's all about in its relation to how much music or how little music or what's on the screen or what's not on the screen. But you can't it's not just like we decided not to put music here. Like, it's a choice to be silent from a musical point of view.
Yeah. You remember we saw How to Have Sex at Sundance, and they mentioned that when you're on spring break, there's always sounds. There's a neighbor yelling, there's some music, there's some bass. There's, like, you're every single minute of every day, there's some sort of sound happening around you. And at the end, when she gets in the car and she's going home, there's no music, there's no sound. And suddenly there's that moment of, like, even if she is alone or isn't alone, like, you just feel alone. You feel like you're now suddenly away. And that was mentioned during the Q&A. And I think that hit the nail on the head of what we were feeling was the world shrunk. There was no outside sound. It was just the quiet sitting in the car driving away. It really added to it. But then again, like we just mentioned, the lack of music added to it because it was poignant and meant something.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, it's also, I mean, I don't know, those of us who have been to therapy before, you know, there's I don't know if it's like an official medical type of person, but there's there's people you meet out there who you feel like there's a theme song going on in their head at all times. Like they think they're living their life, you know, in a movie that has a theme song going. And
once mine's mine's the Benny Hill soundtrack. It's basically the Benny Hill theme song is in my head all the time, which makes sense when you meet me.
And I think that that's also true, is that that's part of what happens when you watch these things, is people think, you know, what's the soundtrack of my life? What's the what is the song that's in this moment? Almost as a way to feel more relevant or more here on the planet or whatever. But it's it is an amazing force, music.
Yeah.
And when done well, it adds exponentially to the experience of a movie or a television show or whatever.
Mine, Katie, what's playing in your head?
It's just Hans Zimmer.
Is it?
My whole life is just Hans Zimmer score. Just kidding.
Nice.
Extremely intense.
Very triumphant to go get coffee in the morning, which is great.
I was just looking at my score playlists, and every one that I like is Hans Zimmer. Just feel like that should be. I'm realizing this looking at it.
There's two answers to that question. One is he does a lot every
year. Yeah.
So there's a pure just numbers thing of Hans Zimmer. But also he's really fucking good.
Yeah, he's really good.
You know? So
if there's a soundtrack playing in my head, it's still probably the OC soundtrack, because that was really just a formative years of my life. I really listened to it nonstop in high school, as did a lot of my friends. So it's still there.
I mean, that's not a bad one to have in there, if that's for sure.
Just that and Hans Zimmer alternating, depending on my mood. That.
There's no actual silence in Katie's life.
No.
No, it just carries. It's always in there.
Well, that's what I feel like. I see all these kids who are like friends of my kids. And again, we seem to love the segment that is Chris as an old man. But they all walk around with one earbud in.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm always like, what's in that one? Right, like I get why you only have one, because you want to maybe hear whatever the fuck's going on in real life in your other ear. But is it theme music? Are they listening to just, you know, everyday music? Is it like a podcast? Like what?
Yeah.
What is that 15-year-old walking around all day with the one earbud in listening to?
You know? You hope it's a theme song. You know, it could be something nice for them to walk to.
I was definitely that teenager who was like, you know, I have to be listening to my music a lot of the time.
It music most of the time?
Oh, yeah. Always music. Yeah. Like back then, I don't think there were like podcasts, or I certainly wasn't listening to audiobooks or anything. It was just the OC soundtrack or like Paramore.
Nice. I think for Chris, for some reason, I always figure for Chris, it's just like Werner Herzog, like narrating his life in his head. That's what I, for some reason, hear. Do you know what I mean? I don't know if that.
You know what the sad thing is? When Katie said that, I was going to say that the one that's always in my head is Dazed and Confused.
Oh,
I love that soundtrack.
That's better than today you must do another podcast recording. That's a bad impression, but
It is. I'm just trying not to derail this conversation with musicals, but I feel like an actual, like, legitimate answer to that would probably be a show tune of some kind, because I do out loud, like, rather than talking to myself, find myself like show tuning my thoughts, like just feeding my dog
The embarrassing one for me, that I'll admit, that my kids, every time it happens, which unfortunately is often, just stare at me. Is I love the Disney animated Beauty and the Beast. I can sing all those songs. I love them. I feel good when I hear them.
Yes.
And you know, it's that weird thing where you need to pump yourself up and you just start singing.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
be our guest.
Disney had some banger, like Lion King.
Yes.
I mean, and if we don't mention the Tarzan soundtrack, where like Phil Collins like set your eardrums on fire,
yes,
we would be remiss. Yes, that's a fantastic. But it is true, like they had some really great like custom songs and original songs as well, which obviously added to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so those are the custom ones, and then there's of course with the kids movies where you take a song like All Star and put that on Shrek, and then it just becomes the unofficial theme song of that movie.
Yeah.
You know. or even of just the entire series. But yeah, it's for obvious reasons, we seem to love music and movies, so we know how important they are, despite some people early in our careers telling us maybe not.
So. Well, it's also not something, the funny part is, and I didn't graduate from film school, but having been at some, there's not a lot of time devoted to teaching people how to marry these two things. There are a lot of times just like gut emotional reactions. I mean, the one we haven't talked about, which in my opinion is one of the better uses of music ever, was Pulp Fiction. I mean, not only do you have the dance scene, you know, with Uma Thurman and John Travolta that's very famous, but there's some great other songs in there. And there's some stuff where you're just like, holy shit. Like he had, you know, for some of his stuff, that real sense of, you maybe have heard it, maybe you haven't heard it, but now you can't not hear it.
Like
And that's sort of what Guardians of the Galaxy was like. You know, you're like, God, I know I love this song. I can't believe it's in this movie.
Well, that's the thing about movies that's so cool, is it is like a marriage of so many different things. You know, it's a visual art form, it's writing, but it's also music. Like that, there's, we could have a whole hour long podcast devoted just to music, and we didn't even talk about musicals, you know? So that's, it's cool that it just, you can experience all of those things in one. Movies are the best.
Yeah. And I like watching sort of period pieces. I get thrown off a little bit, like when period pieces have like modern music in it, like A Knight's Tale with Heath Ledger. There's a moment where they're like singing, they're like dancing to a David Bowie song, but you know, it's A Knight's, and you're like, wait, I'm confused. But like, it's still fun to watch and entertaining. And then there's other ones that like are not heard by the folks, so it's a background needle drop, but you know, Django Unchained, the Tupac song hitting when there's like the shootout. I'm like, obviously these are two things conflicting in my head. I'm thinking, I'm hearing a modern song, I'm seeing a non-modern. But I think that's what's been really fun about movies, is being able to sort of marry those visuals with that audio track to really hone in on something to feel. And I love it.
Baz Luhrmann is obviously like the main example of that with Moulin Rouge, but then with Gatsby after that, and the new Elvis movie. I feel
and his version of Romeo and Juliet.
I am a Baz Luhrmann defender because I love Moulin Rouge, but I feel like in like the Great Gatsby in particular, but maybe for some people also the Elvis movie, when it was kind of like mixing genres with Elvis's music, that could have like thrown people off a little bit because it wasn't, but I think it's cool and creative. So
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Just remember, if you listened to last week's podcast, Katie also thought A Different Man was cool and creative.
It was.
Hey, wait a minute. Oh. All right.
You guys haven't seen it.
All right.
I thought you were going to say the buoy and the satellite. I know, that's true. You basically have seen it.
I can't actually roll on the satellite and the buoy, because maybe it'll work. I got to leave that one out there.
We'll have to watch it and see what kind of music it has in it.
So I think, folks, that's about music and movies. We hope you, next time you watch something, you actually check it out and see what it is you like, or remember the ones you really like, because it is a powerful force.
Yeah, absolutely.
Making the experience really memorable and enjoyable.
Yeah. What is your favorite musical moment from a film? We want to hear from you. Check out our Instagram, follow our podcast, and tune in every Thursday for a new episode. Katie, do we have a special musical goodbye?
Don't you dare make me sing it on the spot. Bye.